In the lives of Native Americans, we all have one thing in common: bloodlines. The bloodlines are what connect our past to our future. In this podcast, we talk with Indigenous women who are impacting their world for the better, in big ways and small ways, while never forgetting to go back to their roots. Join Jeannie Burgess, member of the Peoria Tribe of Oklahoma, as she has conversations with powerful Native American women who are making a difference in their neighborhood, communities, and their world. Please subscribe and share and review our podcast. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Bloodlines. I am so excited today to talk to someone that I have been kind of watching for a while and also met earlier this year. Her name is Cheyenne Sixkiller Lassiter. And I want to welcome you today to Bloodline, Cheyenne. Tell everybody about yourself.
Well, I am a 33-year-old mom of two. I am a full-time dental hygiene student, and I'm a member of the Peoria Tribe. I'm an enrolled member, but I do have bloodlines in the Cherokee and Creek tribes as well.
So we've talked about, as I've talked about on the podcast, most Native American women that I've talked to have more than one bloodline. Do you remember when you first kind of figured out that you were multi-tribal?
Yeah, I've always kind of known. I mean, I think I was probably around six or seven when I really started to know what I call as my home tribe, which is the Peoria tribe I'm most associated with. But my grandmother, Ruby Sixkiller, was a Cherokee woman. And I have always known that I've had Native blood in me. You know, she primarily spoke Cherokee. There wasn't a whole lot of English in her home whenever I was little. But I've always been around it. I mean, I've been to powwows, and I've been exposed to beadwork and painting and, you know, smudging and things from such a young age that even when I do it in my own home now, you know, it's just been such a thing I've known my entire life. You know, I don't really know much. I don't know my life without my culture.
It really is like breathing.
Yes.
You know, it just kind of comes out of you. Okay. Some people may not know what smudging is. Can you tell people what smudging is?
So I may not have the exact definition, but smudging is like basically when you are like blessing or cleaning out the energies and just renewing the spirit of your home. I know that a lot of people have different ways and traditions that they do it. You know, I have always followed my grandmother Sixkiller's way of doing it, which is, you know, we pray in our homes, we burn our sage, and we do open the windows. You know, we're not like flaring and burning the house out, but, you know, we really just set our mind to our intentions of the things that we want in our home. And we bless every inch of the home.
Yeah. At the general council meeting, which we're going to talk a little bit about, they actually gave out sage to do the burning of. And so, but not everybody knows what smudging is. Okay. What caught my eye about you and why I really wanted you on here was at the general council meeting, the Peoria Tribe of Oklahoma does an annual general council meeting in March where everybody gets together, and it's pretty much everybody in the entire tribe. And you did this amazing reading, and I want you to tell folks about what that was. You had on a red dress, which was significant.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an original piece that you did. I want you to talk about that. What prompted you to do that? And what prompted you to go to, because, you know, the general council program is, it's a lot of business, but it is also some other things, you know, and the program is actually pretty tight.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really amazes me, like the process of how it happened, how you thought, this is what I want to do, who you went to be able to do it, and why you felt like it was so important.
So I spent 7 months writing that piece. It's called In Honor of the Thousands. It's been published by the Indian Residential School Societies and in Native Hoop magazines and a multitude of other places. Last year, I really started digging into the history of residential schools. You know, my grandparents and my father, Richard, they grew up in that era where, you know, a lot of Native Americans were taken into these residential schools and they were basically broken of their heritage and everything that they are and forced to assimilate to the civilized world that we know. And the more that I read about it, I learned into all the horrific things that happened, all of the abuse. And I started to see these things in Canada that surfaced, like in British Columbia and all over the place, where they were recovering literally thousands and thousands of bodies of children. And I get emotional when I think about it, you know, because it's truly tragic to think that, you know, that our people were lied to. And I feel like uncovering the truth and reminding people, you know, of where we've come from was very important. And so I just began writing it. It was probably like in May, the year before. And each time that passed and every time I would see a new report or a new thing, you know, I would just keep on and keep on. And I had went and revised it. And one day, when I finished it, my mom was actually at my house and I said, "Mom, I got something that I want you to listen to." And I said, "I am really, really bothered by some of this stuff with the residential schools. And I've been, you know, it's just been on my mind and I just wanted to share it." And so I read it to my mom. My mom just started bawling. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she said, "Cheyenne, you need to share this with people. You need to figure out a way, give it to someone, find a way to get this out there." And so I kind of took a leap of faith. Talking to people is really out of my comfort zone, believe it or not. I do not like doing that. I had no experience really other than my college speech classes.
Right.
So I sent it to the business committee and they liked it. I kind of gave them my suggestion about, hey, well, this would be a good opportunity. And, you know, emotions are kind of high during election times anyways.
Yes.
You know, I feel like taking a step back and having everybody to remember, you know, where we have come from, you know, to get to this point, to have this nation, to be able to hold these elections and to really come together as a tribe. We need to honor the people that have endured all of the suffering and the things before we got to this point,
right?
You know? So, and then I emailed it to the Chief Harper of the Peoria tribe and, you know, they got in contact with me. And so I got to visit with him a little bit and talk to him about, you know, the kind of amateur writer I'm doing, amateur writing. Mm-hmm. And so he said, you know, he wanted me to share it. He said, "This is very important. This is very important for all of us to be reminded of and to give recognition to it." You know, and Chief was super supportive of it. He said, "If you get scared, you know, we'll make time for you to do this. But if you get scared, it's going to be fine. You know, you don't have to do it. This is your masterpiece. You do with it what you need to." Mm-hmm. And so the red dress actually that I wore signified the missing and murdered Indigenous women that we all know. The Red Dress Project is something where, you know, and I wanted it to be included, you know, in it, because it's not just our children in the residential, you know, victims that went missing. I mean, we have literally thousands of women, Native American women, that go missing all the time. And I wanted to just really put that out there and let people contemplate on it and make people pique interest in it, you know, get more people involved in, you know, what is MMIW? What is all of the orange shirts about? What is all of this stuff? You know, because the more talk that we generate about it, the more chances we have of taking care of the problem, of bringing people home or bringing closure to these families. So
how did it feel that day to have on that red dress and be all ready to go and stand up there? Because I know for me, just as sitting there And I had a table up towards the front, but it was a very emotional experience for me. And I just wonder what was going through your mind as you were standing there doing that.
I felt so powerful in my red dress. I did not even feel like my normal self. I felt like the blood that was coursing in my veins was the blood of thousands of Indigenous women standing behind me, you know, telling me, girl, you got to say what you got to say. And it was just, it was the most powerful and emotional moment too, especially because, you know, it's such a sensitive topic. And there were so many things in that speech that I covered that were facts, that were true about the suffering. And it was very hard, very, very difficult to stand up there and to keep my composure and say that to people. But when I looked out into the audience and I saw how much respect, and when I saw, you know, I saw so many tears falling down, but I felt like this is what I, like, I wanted to get into people's hearts, and I wanted them to recognize and, you know, hear the voices of the kids and the women and the men that have come before us, you know, and to really appreciate our history as an Indigenous people, no matter what tribe you were. You know, I mean, and I really just wanted people to look beyond our skin colors, or, you know, or our eye color, hair color. Stop looking at those things on the surface. Stop judging by our beadwork and all of that. And just look at who we are mm-hmm. as a people.
Mm-hmm. I know that you didn't know my mom. My mom was Alice Burgess. I have a strong mama, like you have a strong mama.
I do. My mom is a strong woman.
Our mothers are forces of nature. Mm-hmm. Which meant that the people, and so was my grandmother, Ruby, you know, my mom's mom and stuff. But how do you feel like being a Native American woman and having all those women that went before you? How do you think it gives you a daily strength that helps you carry on?
It makes me feel like the things that the women before me, all of the challenges that they have endured and overcome, you know, it makes me feel like even though I have my own challenges, I know that I carry their strength with me. You know, a lot of times whenever I start to doubt myself or I get nervous about pursuing something new, I think about my grandmother and, you know, what would my grandmother tell me to do? You know, and I hear her voice. And my grandma, Ruby, was such a strong and powerful woman. And the same with my mother. You know, my mom, she's always, you know, pushed me. And, you know, whenever mm-hmm. Sometimes when I want to back out of things or I think that I'm not enough, even if it's something that she wouldn't do.
Right.
You know, she pushes me and she's like, sis, you know, you've got to do this for us. You have to do this for all of us, because I mean, we have strength. We have so much from all of the women that came before us that we have to offer. And
yeah.
Why not? Why hold back? Why not be like a force of nature?
Right.
And just do what we're called to do.
You know, it's funny because I learned about so much of my Peoria heritage. I'm a 16th. That's my number. And learned so much about my Indian heritage sitting around my grandmother's table, where being a Peoria Indian was a topic of conversation a lot. So that's where I learned a lot of things. And then, of course, you know, as far as like things that happened, my mother made grape dumplings. Grape dumplings were a big thing for her, and which kept that was her part of the heritage that she did. What kind of traditions and conversations go on in your family, and does your family keep it alive too?
My family is very much in our heritage. We're very centered in the things. My mom makes amazing fry bread. That is her gift. She makes really wonderful fry bread. We all go crazy on it.
I may have to try that sometime.
We do enjoy getting together, and you know, something that we've all really done a lot over the years is we burn sage together as a family. You know, sometimes it'll just be in the living room. We'll light some sage, and then sometimes, you know, we'll all go in the backyard and we'll throw a whole bunch of sage in there, and we'll get real about talking about life and spiritual things. And we really try to stay connected spiritually to nature. You know, we try, that's where I think that most of our praying happens as a family, is when we're all out at the lake or we're just in the backyard listening and feeling the wind. I know that sounds, that's the way that we stay connected and we stay rooted. We're big fans of, you know, walking barefoot. That's something that we've always done since we were kids. And we really like to keep a little bit of our Cherokee language alive. My brothers and I will, you know, we'll exchange words back and forth here and there because we don't have the fluency that we used to have when my grandparents were alive.
Right.
But we're still trying to learn more of that because that was the first introduction of our lives was Cherokee. And, we've been really trying to go to powwows and stuff more and get more involved with the Peoria tribe because that is our home. You know, we have bloodlines in other places, but the Peoria tribe has been our home. And that's where my brother, my mom, we all want to serve and see the success of the tribe in the future.
Yeah, I saw your mom at a meeting last night, actually. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was sitting right behind me. What do you want most to pass down to your children about what it means to be an Indigenous Native American? And how are you trying to do that?
I want my kids to understand the strength of the people that they come from. You know, I want my boys to grow up to be strong Indigenous men and to be proud of their heritage, to teach it to their children. And I want them to have their success and a decent life, but I want them so badly to have a spiritual connection with the earth. And I want them to know people in their tribe and I want them to be involved and, you know, to care about other tribal members and to be inclusive. That's something that, you know, and my kids are light skins. You know, I got light skinned babies. They tan in the summer, but they're a lot lighter than me, you know. But I also want them to realize that being a Native American is much more than just how you look. You know, the face of natives has changed significantly over the years. And I think it's really important for us to include that and to keep our traditions alive. I would love for my children to begin dancing. You know, I would love for my boys to find that part of them in their heart and to follow it.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you're light skinned, like, you know, like me, I mean, you couldn't get any, I mean, I can look at you and see it's in the eyes. I can see it. I can see the structure. I can see that you look Native American. You do. I do not. Now, my mother had really pale skin, kind of like mine, but she had black eyes that were very much Native American. And then my grandmother, her mother, my mother, of course, was an eighth, which would make my grandmother quarter. She had the jowls, you know, the Indian jowls.
yes.
And the big belly. Do you know what I mean? All the kids love to lay on, you know,
love to hug those big grandma bellies, man.
Yeah, she was short. Yeah, she was short, so she wasn't very tall, but she had you could see it. Do you know what I mean? You could really see it. And we were going through pictures. My dad passed away last year. We were going through pictures at his house and happened to run into some pictures of her, and she was so distinctively Native American. It was just, you know, and her maiden name actually was Peckham. So, which isn't normally a Native American name. It's actually more of a British name. Now, have you ever looked at your, and you may have already done this, but you know, I'm on the enrollment committee and I have been for several years. And so what we do is we look at bloodlines, you know, which people say, what does a bloodline look like? And I'm like, well, it sort of looks like a basketball bracket. You know, you've got these different people coming in. Have you seen your bloodline? Have you taken a look at your bloodline?
I have talked to my family about it. I know that I do come from the Staten family. Mm-hmm. Her name, we called her Jackie. She was my grandma, but, you know, her name was Thelma Levina Staten. That is my great grandmother. And, you know, I do know that her sister, Georgie, I know a lot of those families, but that's something that we're actually looking more into. You know, my brothers and I have really been wanting to learn more about our bloodline and to learn more about them in the history of what, you know, their involvement in the tribe. I mean, there's so much to learn, I think. And, you know, I'm still learning a lot too, because I'm pretty young, and I mean, I'm new to a lot of these things. So that's something that I also would love to learn more, and to learn about people who knew my past family members, you know, whether they have something good to say, bad to say. I want to know, because I want to know my history and as far as I can dive.
Yeah. You know, it's the thing about it is when you start going to the bloodline, and when you start going all the way back, and then you see that many of them obviously had Indian names. It's mm-hmm. like, that's when it gets really, really real. It's when you start to see that. It's interesting, because that's why I named the podcast Bloodlines, because, you know, if you don't have a bloodline, you don't have anything really. Because the bloodline is this, the bloodline is really essential to who we are as Native Americans. Now, you know, the Peoria tribe is actually, you know, the Peoria, the Kaskaskia, the Piangashaw, and the Weehaw. Mm-hmm. My particular group of people comes from the Weehaw. Do you happen to know, you know, that you could probably find that out if you don't know which branch it comes from?
So I've heard both. I've heard the Weehaw mentioned a couple of times mm-hmm. growing up. I've heard, I don't know if like, what show, you said, did you say Piangashaw or something?
There's Piangashaw, Kaskaskia, yeah, Weehaw. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't pronounce the one that you said that started with the P, but I've heard that mentioned several times as I've grown up.
Yeah.
I definitely do plan on learning more about that. Also, because I, you know, I have a desire to become more involved in the tribe, but I first want to learn and know myself better and the history of my bloodline.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, if you go to the website, you go to the Peoria website, my mother designed the emblem. I don't know if you know that, but my mother designed.
No, I didn't. Wow.
What is now the logo.
Wow. That's
that you incredible. See everywhere, right? So each of those arrows means something, and each of those arrows is connected to a tribe. So if you go to the website, it breaks that down. But my mother initially did that as an applique. It was done as an applique on a piece of fabric. Now, I always think of her every time I see it. And I don't know if you've had a chance to go to the NAM Museum, the Native American Museum in Oklahoma City yet or not. I haven't, but I want to.
I would love to go to it.
Yeah, I think that my mother would just be... Like when I'm in the meeting where they have the business, you know, the business committee meetings mm-hmm. and stuff, and I look over the fireplace and I see that version that they've done with stone and metal with the four arrows. It's just like, I think my mother would.
Wow.
I think my mother would just be
so proud, so happy. That's incredible.
Yeah, yeah, she really would. And so that's why I wanted to start this. I wanted to just talk to women like you and like me that are Native American, that are trying to keep it going and alive and vibrant, because it is. It is alive and vibrant and growing. And, you know, I think that so much about, you know, I think you kind of downplay some of your talents. You know, I mean, you're an artist really in so many ways, the different things that you do, including the writing. And, but you're also a mom and a student, and you're doing a lot of different things. But I think that the tribe needs that involvement of people like you and women like you that will keep it all going and, will keep it alive.
Thank you. I appreciate that a lot. You know, I think I stay humble about my accomplishments and the achievements, because I know that my work is not done yet. You know, so when I do one thing and I move forward, you know, I'm very proud of the things that I've accomplished. You know, I have done photography, you know, I've been an honor student. I'm a full-time mom. I'm a, you know, and I have dreams that I can am continually working towards. You know, I do have a passion for dentistry. I prayed about it for many years, and I've been called to do dentistry. And I know that my calling is to serve in tribal communities. And that has just been the thing that's had the fire in my belly for so long, is because I know how important that our oral health is, but I also know that there's a need for it, not just in my own tribal community, mm-hmm. but beyond here. You know, I plan on doing work as a missionary on Native American reservations.
Yeah. Yeah.
Once my children are grown, and I know that there are so many things that I have felt called to do. and, you know, I accomplish one thing, you know, and I'm like, okay, well, now it's time. That's great. But let's move on and let's see if we can make a bigger difference here. I want to serve the tribe in some kind of way in the future. Mm-hmm. I'm not, you know, I've been praying a lot about it, you know, and I only will do things whenever it's sincerely something that I feel in my heart.
Yeah.
If I don't feel it 100%, then I move on to something different, you know, and I felt called to the tribe for so long. And I think getting to know everybody and, you know, just getting to know more about our tribe, like this morning, I read through the Constitution because I'm taking it serious. It's time for me to start really learning.
Yeah.
Because, you know, our generations, you know, our elders are continually getting older. And, you know, and we know that someday they will cross over, and it's up to my generation and the younger ones to keep it alive and to keep things moving forward. And
yeah,
the best thing to do is to begin now,
yeah,
you know, and
no,
learn
what, true.
And learn what we can from our elders. You know, mm-hmm. we have some of the most fierce and strong elder men and men in our tribe. The women are just so incredible. Sometimes I'm nervous to even talk to some of them because I look up to them, and with all of their wisdom, their strength, that I'm just like, oh, have mercy on me. But I want to learn from them because I know that that can only make me better. You know, it can only make what I do for the tribe more impactful for the generations to come.
Yeah, it was interesting last night at the meeting. They were talking about, you know, we have a lot of focus now on culture, the mm-hmm. culture. And, you know, it's like, as any tribe, you know, if you all, you know, there's a lot of things that are involved in a tribe, you know, it is a lot of business.
Yes.
It is a lot of business. And it is a lot of bylaws and constitutions and things like that. But it also, what I really love is that there's been a real focus on bringing up the cultural aspect of it, bringing up, you know, being involved in powwows and our veterans and different things like that. We have an amazing children's Christmas party, which, well, people can think, well, that's not Native American, but you know what? The community of that is definitely Native American. And I think sometimes we forget that the most important aspect of being a Native American is that it is community. You know, uh-huh. It's like, I remember when the book Tribes came out, which was basically about marketing, and the book was, you know, it was called Tribes, but it was how people were marketing. They were gathering people in tribes. And it was always funny because I was like, well, I'm from a real tribe, and people would make I was like, no, seriously, I have a real tribe, not a fake tribe, a real tribe.
And I love those gatherings. You know, my family and I, we look forward to the Christmas parties every year, and every year it's something, I mean, it's just spectacular, you know. I show my people that I go to school with, my friends and stuff, and they all are like, man, I wish I could have a community like that. And, you know, and that's where I really get to see other tribal members. That's where I really get to socialize and visit with a lot of people, because I do live out of state. And I mean, I'm busy with school. We all have lives,
right?
You know, and so taking that time to where we're able to visit, and, you know, we were able to see Chief and visit and talk to everybody. And there's no, you know, it's not like a business situation. You know, we're all there together as a tribe and a family to enjoy each other, you know, and to share a meal and to just really enjoy the passing of another year.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, I love General Council because I feel like that, you know, there's so many different things that happen at General Council, and just to be there all together. And when the drums start to come in, when they bring the drums and the dancers in, and,
oh yes,
you know, it's just chills run down your spine because, you know, okay, it's like, there's a connection with all of it. You know, it's like, you cannot ever disconnect when you're a Native American, because there is no disconnection.
No, you don't disconnect.
Do you know what I mean? There is no disconnection and there is no, okay, well, this is my tribal part, and this is my, well, no, it doesn't really work that way. It all works together. And when I walk in, you know, that when I walk in the Peoria headquarters and I see all those chiefs pictures up there, mm-hmm. and I see like, wow, all those people that, you know, have come before it. It's pretty amazing to see all that. Okay, so what do you want the audience to know about what it means to be a Native American woman in 2023?
Oh, what would I say? I would say being a Native American woman in 2023 presents a lot of unique opportunities because we have knowledge, you know, we have our power and we know our worth and the opportunities that are ahead of us. You know, I strongly encourage all the other Native American women to really, really think about and honor the blood that runs in their veins. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of strong women that have come before and, you know, we are responsible for leading the generations after us. You know, I know that sometimes, you know, it can be intimidating to, you know, especially considering that, you know, Native Americans, we've had our trials in the past and stuff, but we have to just really believe in ourselves, you know, even when it is scary, even when we don't think that we are strong enough or we're worthy, we most definitely are. We are, in my opinion, the strongest women on this planet, you know, and I might be a little bit biased, but I know so many amazing Native American women from so many different tribes, and it's just, I don't even know what to say further than that, honestly. You know, I really want women to dig down deep and understand that they do have what it takes to pursue and make a difference. They have everything that they need. They just have to believe in it.
Yeah. And that's a really great way for us to end this podcast and for something for all of us to think about. And you know, whether you're Native American or not, to think about your heritage is really important. So we're going to end this podcast on that mm-hmm. note. My guest has been Cheyenne Six Color Laster, and just so glad to have her on. And we will see you all next time, and hope you all have learned so much from this conversation today, because that's why we're here.
Thank you.